Om Shanti. Some time ago, Daddy was with a very small group of people. We were on a tour, and so it was one person who was driving and another couple of people with us. And it was a new city. There wasn't a center there. And so morning class was just that very small group. And so Murali, of course, and then afterwards it was time just for Daddy to engage with us. And so they asked Daddy the question, Daddy, what's the difference between your generation and our generation? And Daddy said, in my days, nobody had to teach us respect, but we automatically had respect. And so we were able to respect all those who were senior to us, but all those who were equal to us also. And yes, we respected those who were younger, because we knew by giving them respect, they would learn about respect. And your generation doesn't know about giving respect. Because it was a small group and Daddy knew them all very well, she could be very open with them. But everybody was touched by that because they all felt that, yes, it's a big difference in the way things are today. This was some years ago, but even then, and the way things would have been when Daddy was growing up and then coming to the yagya. So respect is something which is missing very much in the world today. But there's a reason why respect is missing. And that is because there's a lack of self-respect. And Baba tells us that everything begins inside and then it gets expressed outside, which is absolutely true. And so how come the general state of affairs today is worse than it was 10 years ago or before and before and before? And so what is it that causes lack of self-respect? I want to share another story that's connected with this. It was in the 80s, early 80s, that there was a conference in Geneva, and it was one of the early ones that I attended at the UN. And the theme of the conference was removing discrimination in terms of matters of belief. And they'd chosen the title very specifically because it was a time when Russia, China were very strongly communist and there was no question of God or religion being taken up on any level. And so just this in terms of matters of belief and so removing discrimination. And every ambassador, the first day was the ambassador speaking on behalf of their countries. And of course, every ambassador who spoke said, we have no discrimination in our country. And the NGOs were seated at the back and they would smile at each other because they were from those countries. And they knew that there was a huge amount of discrimination. And the first ones to be challenged were North Americans because USA and Canada had stood up and said, we have no discrimination. And to what extent they believed it to be true or not, I don't know. But the people who were there with us in the back, it was people from the indigenous community mostly, from America, North America. And so when it was time for the NGOs to speak, there was time given. They spoke up and talked about the discrimination that they had experienced in their countries. Australia, New Zealand, again, the official line was no discrimination. Everyone can practice whatever beliefs they have. But again, it was the NGOs who spoke and said that we've experienced and they had all the facts and statistics to prove it. But the conference continued until there came a point when Israel spoke and Saudi Arabia spoke, and they said the same thing, no discrimination. But then the Israeli person spoke quite length, and the Saudi Arabian challenged him, and they couldn't carry on with the session because it was such confrontation that had started. So the person who was the educator, he stopped the conference and said that, okay, we'll take a break now and we'll adjourn, we'll come back again tomorrow. And he was a judge from Poland, and we knew him because Poland had now allowed religious organizations to come and do things, early 80s. And next day when we came back, the Israeli person who had spoken had brought the ambassador. The first day it had been an academic who had spoken, but the next day it was the ambassador. And he immediately started shooting out with words. And there was a response from the other side. So the judge actually had to say, we're not going to continue this conference any longer. And I've had a very good invitation, and I propose that we follow that path. The University of Minnesota is saying that they would like to do some research in the subject of discrimination, and it would be neutral, and it would be in a few selected countries across the globe, and it would be with young people. And so everybody, the ambassadors, liked the idea. And so that conference came to an end without any conclusion, except that we're going to let the university do their study, and when they finish their study research, then we're going to come back again and have another session. So a few years later, got another invitation, and this time it was to be in Poland, and the judge had organized that also. So the results of the university were very interesting, and essentially it was that where there's lack of self-esteem, there's going to be discrimination, and where there's high self-esteem, there's no discrimination. And so the connection of respect, discrimination, self-esteem, you can see the connections. But the most important thing, what are the causes of lack of self-esteem, and how can we change that today in Brahmin life? And what they spoke about in terms of what they had done, all the research in, I think, 5 different countries, and it was amongst young people from 15 to 18. And they found that where there was a strong faith system within the family, there was lack of discrimination. Where there was addiction within a family, and the young people were influenced by that addiction, whether it was nicotine and alcohol in the older generation, it was more likely to lead to addiction within the younger members, and then of course it would be other substance addictions usually. They found that these two factors were the biggest things that created lack of self-esteem. And there was a third factor too, and that was where children were brought up in an atmosphere of love, again there was higher self-esteem. And so these three factors, faith, addiction or lack of addiction, and also love within the family. And when you think about it, you don't necessarily need to spend a few years doing a research project. You could have predicted that these would be factors that would be part of the story anyway. But nowadays people want evidence-proof research. And so then that's what came from that conference. But look at it from Baba's perspective, and you see that faith, Baba's children, the family, I don't mean little children, I mean, whoever comes to Baba and starts following the path of spirituality, we either have faith in Shiv Baba because we've had some experience, or we have faith in the knowledge that Baba has given us. That's given us a very solid foundation. Our questions have been answered and so on. But faith is a very, very strong factor. And the second factor, when people come to Baba, what we found, and this is what's happened in the de-addiction campaign in India, very categorically. Abroad we've seen it on an anecdotal level, but in India they have actual figures, because we tried getting figures abroad, but people didn't want to give figures. They didn't want to fill in the long detailed questionnaire. But in India, they were quite happy to fill in the questionnaire. So the addiction campaign started a few years ago. And as you've seen, do you know, it's a huge, huge campaign that's gone all over India. And there's been a memorandum of agreement signed with the government. All the medical people in all the different states are involved in this also. A, they're studying it, but also B, they're supporting and cooperating with teaching meditation in various places. So I'm sure you're aware of it. So what we found is that as soon as a person starts to meditate, we don't have to ask them, do you smoke, do you drink, do you do this, do you do that? Not necessary. We just teach them to meditate. And probably within a week, many have come back to us and said, I was able to give up smoking. I was able to give up drinking. Maybe within a month, some people come back and say, I used to take drugs and I don't anymore. And so, as I say, when we wanted it in hard numbers, nobody was really willing to fill in those big forms. But on an anecdotal level, every teacher, and many of you are teachers, you've given 7 days courses and people have come back to you and told you that. So it became very clear that something within meditation enables people to give up their addictions very easily, very naturally, without any force or pressure. But also, it's not giving up for a short time, but it's giving up for, you can never say lifetime, but it's giving up for extended periods of time. It's not a short-term thing, it's long-term. And yes, for some, we would say that, yes, they've been able to give up for 40 years, 50 years now, also some people in Gyan outside India. So it works. Meditation is an antidote. Why? Because when the soul feels fulfilled, then in that fulfillment, there isn't that emptiness that creates the need for substances or any other type of addiction. And it's very much connected with the state of self-esteem. And so the giving of respect, second step, but first step, my own state of self-esteem. If I'm still addicted to this, that, or the other, and it's then not just a question of substance, then it's also the question of the inner addictions, lust, greed, anger, ego, attachment. Any one of these are also addictions. All of them are addictions. I don't need to prove that to you. You understand that already. And so, the last bit, the love. Yes, when people come to Baba, they experience God's love. They experience the love of the family. But probably the last thing that they come to is to be able to love the self. And so, how do we develop that? And through that, how do we develop self-esteem? And so, one of the big things that Baba has explained is that when we don't know ourselves, we're not in touch with the original qualities of the soul. And the original qualities of the soul are peace, Atmaka Swadharam, has shanti. My original state of being, my original religion is peace, love, truth, joy, and purity. This is what the soul is made up of. It's not bones and flesh and things like this, but it's made up of these qualities. And when I don't know about soul consciousness, I'm cut off from these qualities, these inner values that the soul has. And the state of the world we see today is a direct result of not being in touch with the self. And when I'm not in touch with myself, then of course there isn't any self-esteem. There's a big subject of identity today and trying to know myself. But of course when I still am hooked into the external and my identity depends on my position, my possessions, my property, any of these things, it's going to be not easy for me to maintain my self-respect or self-esteem, because these things can change from day to day. My position can change, my possessions, I have them, then I don't have them, my property, I have it today, and then maybe I don't have it anymore for whatever reason. And so basing my identity on these externals is always going to be a problem. And the soul will always go through inferiority and superiority complexes. Sometimes there are others who have more than I have and I feel inferior. Then there'll be others who have less than I have and I feel superior. So that fluctuation continues. But when I have a connection with myself, my own spiritual identity, that's the first step, a big step. But the more I experience those inner values that are the core values of the soul, my self-esteem grows. And every Murali reminds us right at the very beginning, who are you? Who do you belong to? The spiritual father speaks to the spiritual children. That's a sort of classic in the Sakar Muralis, but also other expressions that Baba uses about who is the one who's speaking to you and who are you who's listening. The child of God, the godly student. Again, different expressions for that. In the Avyak Muralis, there's usually half a page, a few paragraphs in which Baba is reminding us who we are and bringing us to that stage of self-esteem. But when I know who I am and I know what my original values are, only to the extent that I follow those values in my life as virtues. So peace is my original value. It's the core value of the soul. But when I find I'm able to follow, if I've experienced peace in silence and meditation, then the next step would be to see to what extent I'm able to maintain that peace when I'm in action. Sitting in a corner and meditating, yes, I'm filling myself, but I don't know to what extent I'm actually changing. It's only when I'm in contact with others and engaged in action that I'll then discover to what extent I'm truly peaceful. Or do I get irritated by somebody else's behavior? Or do I get angered by things that others have done? Whatever, whatever. And so the extent to which I follow those values in my life and express them as virtues in my life, to that extent, my own state of real self-esteem grows. Not the artificial ego that I had before, because of all the external things, but now real value for myself. And when I can value myself, I can also love myself, and I can also respect myself, and I'm able to have self-esteem. And then I'm able to respect others also. I know what it is I think and feel and do and say and do. And so my self-esteem begins to rise only to that extent that I'm following what I have as my core value in my code of conduct. So basically when I walk my talk, then my own self-esteem rises. And others may see, they might not see, it's a secondary thing. But I know what it is I have done and what it is I need to sort out. And so the way to increase self-respect and to come back to a stable state in which there's no fluctuation between the inferiority and the superiority is that state in which I'm following those values, and those values become stronger and stronger within, but also get expressed in my life on all levels. And so when you see someone like Dadi Prakash Mani, and I'm sure many of you, how many of you met Dadi Prakash Mani? Not so many. It's now been many years since she passed away, 20 years actually, nearly, 19. So, but how many of you saw Dadi Janki? Oh, a lot more. Right. But there are still some who didn't raise their hands, so you've been with Baba for 4 years, or maybe around that time, 5 years. So, but certainly those who met the Dadis, you know that their self-esteem was absolutely stable. Whatever else was going on didn't matter. They were able to maintain their peace, their state of love, their awareness of truth at all times. Outside influences didn't shake that even slightly. So we've seen human beings like you and me who have been able to reach that stage. It means that the door is open for all of us, each and every one of us, to do the same. Go back inside, experience the silence, the connection with the self, experience those values within yourself, and then you start expressing them in your life, in your actions. So that would then be the way in which really one's own self-esteem rises. And because I'm valuing and respecting myself, then I can value and respect others also. It extends to human beings without discrimination, absolutely everyone. But it also extends to nature, whether it's the animal kingdom and the respect we have for the sanctity of life in the animals. But then beyond that, the environment totally. Why is it that we've destroyed our environment? They say that human beings are the only species that destroy their own nest. Wherever other species create their nest or their haven, they keep it clean, they keep it protected, they keep it safe. And human beings, what happened to us? We lost track of our own values and truth and reality. And so we started to exploit our own home. And they've made a very good job of it. We've destroyed so many animal species. We've destroyed so much of the environment everywhere. So it starts with that whole concept of valuing myself and then respecting myself and expressing that respect outwards. So when you heard this title, the most profound way to express respect, to express, what was it? the most profound way to express bestowing, to be a bestower, is to be able to give respect. It's a beautiful title, but track it back and see where it begins. And then yes, when I do have that state of self-respect, then there's nothing that I need from another human being. And when I stop being needy, I don't need anything from you. That's when I can start giving to you. And the word devta in Hindi is very beautiful. Devta, the one who gives. Levta, the one who takes. And so do I want to be a deity, the one who is giving? Or am I still needing something for myself? And on an external level, we need human beings to provide us with so much. And then I come to the state where I'm financially independent and I say, well, now I'm capable of looking after myself. I don't need anyone. Not true. I still need support. I need cooperation. And even beyond that, I'll say, but nobody respects me. They don't value me. They don't see me for who I truly am. They have no recognition of who I am. So I'm still in that boat of being needy and wanting. And they say that if you have something already and it belongs to you and you're still wanting it, it doesn't make sense. And so I have everything I need, and respect is my shadow that's following me, and nobody can take that away from me. I respect myself, and so it's always going to be following me wherever it is I go. So I don't need you to give me respect, but rather I have sufficient to be able to give you respect. And when you start giving, what happens then? It automatically comes back to you. And so you don't ask for respect. And if you're demanding respect, why don't you respect me? Why don't you value me? It's because I haven't yet learned to go inside and connect with the treasures that I carry within myself. And so I have it. Nobody can take that away from me. It's my shadow. It's going to follow me wherever I go. But I've forgotten. I don't remember. I've lost touch with myself. That's when I say, I want, I need. But if I come back to that basic spiritual principle that I carry within myself everything I need, and I connect with that and I experience it, then giving respect is very natural and easy. And giving respect is not necessarily giving somebody a platform, but giving respect is a day-to-day thing in which you can listen to somebody. If you have the capacity to listen, and not just listen with your ears, but listen with your heart, so that you're understanding what is behind those words, the feelings, the significance, the meaning with which those words are being spoken, then you're listening with your heart, not just your ears. And then your response is going to be a very different one. So one stage is where I say, I don't have time, I don't have time. And the other is where, okay, I'm going to listen to you, but how am I listening to you? Am I listening to you with a mindset that's already fixed? And so whatever you say isn't going to make any difference. Or am I listening to you with an open heart so that I am able to understand where it is you're coming from and I'm then able to respond to it appropriately? And so to be able to listen, it is a very profound way of actually bestowing, being able to give respect to others. when I'm willing to understand you, I make some meaning from it, then my response is a very different one than it would have been otherwise. The whole subject of harmony and unity can only happen when we listen with that intention of wanting to understand where it is you are coming from. And so can I begin to do that? And it'll happen naturally, because when I respect you, I'm going to give you my time. I'm going to be able to listen to you. But the further steps beyond just physical listening are the spiritual listening. In Satyug, how do we give respect to each other? It's always the mantra, you first, not me first, not I want, but you first. And so here in Sangam Yug, the whole system of Satyug has to start here. Can I say you first rather than me, me and me? But when there's a willingness to have others do what is needed, what they can do, what they have the capacity to do, then that also is a form of bestowing. I remember there was a sister who wanted to translate for Baba, and this was in the 70s, and so I was bringing groups from abroad and translating for them. Mostly in the personal meetings, in the Muralis it was always Shiluben, but then the personal meetings would go on from, Baba would come at 7 o'clock, give a Murali till 9 o'clock, and then the personal meetings would start. And the personal meetings would go on till midnight, 4 o'clock in the morning. That was regular. Who was around in those days? Some of you were, I'm sure. Only one. Okay. So, Didi Manmoini, then called me one day and she said, there's something I want from you. I was surprised, what could Didi want from me? And she said, the story is that there's another sister who very much wants to translate, and she sees that you've been given that role. But I want you to give up that role, and this person should then translate when she's around. I knew this person and I knew she was capable. I said, that's fine, Didi. And Didi said, that's good, because if you allow another one to go ahead, many other doors of opportunity will be open for you. It's not that one door shuts and that's it. Or even that one door shuts and one other door opens. No, one door shuts, but there are other doors, many doors that open. And so that person took on the role of translating whenever she was around. And I had more time. I had time to do many things, and so that was very good. So whatever the role it is you're playing, it's so easy to get attached to that particular role. But if you allow another to take that role, then many other opportunities come up also. So giving respect to another might be that you say that, why don't you try doing this? I've been doing it for a long time. Maybe you should try and do this now. So that also is giving respect. So just think about in what way we can encourage others to move forward. And Brahma Baba created his fortune by giving so many others opportunities to serve. There was a lovely expression that Baba used in the first Murali when Baba came, and that was 21st January 1969. It was Shiv Baba who came, not Bab Dada, but Shiv Baba. Baba said, if I brought Brahma Baba with me, you wouldn't have let him go. Which is true. Everybody was It had just been a few days, 3 days, and so everybody was still a little bit tender, quite emotional. But what Shri Prabhupada said was that when the sun was shining, all of you were hidden. And so it's time now for the sun to move into another sphere, and now it's time for the stars to shine. And so all of you are the living stars, and so it's a chance now for all of you to shine. So that was very beautiful. And so whatever it is I think I'm able to do best, maybe that's true. But if I move out of the way, there'll be others who also take my place, and they'll be able to shine very beautifully too. So giving respect is many layered, and I just have to think about developing my own state of self-respect. The other two things, the faith and the addictions, I want to just mention those things a little bit. Faith in Baba is easy. You hear the Murali, you understand the knowledge, and you know that it's coming from the source. It's not coming from a book, it's not coming from a human being, because these things are not found anywhere. And at times it's a big contradiction to what human beings are saying, but then you have to see what you feel is right. And maybe you experiment with it, and that tells you what is right. But that faith in Baba is strong. And the faith in the family is also strong. Because although we see human imperfection still, like Baba tells us, you're not karmatit. When you are karmatit, when you've settled all your karmic accounts, you'll fly. But the faith within the family is such that there'll always, I know for sure that there's always help available, and there'll always be the cooperation that I need. And so the power of faith, that also gives me a very solid foundation in which to have self-esteem, self-respect. And the addictions, the physical addictions go very fast. But the other addictions, not so easy to recognize always. Anger, that's pretty obvious, so it's easy to recognize. But still, the subtle traces of anger, the subtle traces of attachments and ego, the more I'm able to recognize them in myself, and the more I'm able to deal with them and finish them, to that extent my own state of self-respect is able to grow, and we are able to give respect to all. The Dadis again demonstrated this beautifully. Dadi Kumarka sitting in the forecourt, in the courtyard in Madhuban, and whoever needed to speak to her could just approach her. Didn't matter if it was a new student or very mature student, they could just go to her. And if it was something private, important, then she would say to them, okay, wait, I'll talk to you later. But anybody could approach her. Dadi Janki, she wouldn't take a lift from the fourth floor down to the ground floor in Global House when she needed to go somewhere. She would walk. Why? And she would carry a little box of almonds with herself. And it would take her a long time, sometimes 20 minutes. So we'd try and allocate enough time for that, but it wasn't always possible. So sometimes you say, Daddy, let's just go by lift. The car's waiting and we need to go. And she'd look at us and say, I've got my almonds, how could I give these? And so there was no argument at that point. So she would walk down, and every floor she would be meeting people, and she would be giving them drishti, giving them almonds. It was just a connection of the soul. The almonds were the external excuse in a sense. But just giving drishti and acknowledging each one, whether it was the caretaker, whether it was a teacher, or whether it was someone helping in the kitchen. But she would meet them all as she came down the stairs, and every floor she'd be meeting. And so different ways in which you can express that respect. But the stable power is the force within, maintaining my own state of dignity, so that nobody can take that dignity away from me. No circumstances should be able to take that dignity away, whether it's physical illness or whether it's ups and downs in the economy, whatever it is, my dignity is in my own hands, because I've created that state of stable self-respect. And in that state, really, nobody can shake you. If I'm shaking, what can I give to others? I can't give them peace, I can't give them cooperation, I can't give them support. But where I've worked on the inner level, then yes, I am able to treat every human being with dignity, but equally, nothing can shake my dignity. So it's a lovely subject. Think more about it and experiment with it. But yes, a beautiful sign of being a bestower. And the big thing that Baba did, Baba gave so much respect to each soul, whether it was a child or an adult or an old person. And you hear all the good things that Baba says in the Avyat Muralis, especially to children, to adults, to seniors, everyone. Baba's got something very beautiful to say about them. Something that's special about the child, the adult, and so on. And so that stage where you're able to inspire others to have respect for themselves, maybe this is the most subtle form of bestowing, but it's the most powerful form also, because it's what the world needs now. Whatever is going on around them, if they can rise above through the power of their inner dignity and self-respect, then you've given them everything. Enjoy your time in Madhuban and prepare yourselves to be experiencing Baba's meeting, and a very happy new year to everyone. Om Shanti.